Welcome to our first off-season edition of Irish Illustrated Overtime. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by John Bryce of footballscoop.com and Irish Illustrated. And today's topic, transfer portal and the NIL. And John, we joked right before this, there's no such thing as just one of those two topics anymore. We'll kind of perhaps begin with your trip to the Football Operations Conference. Was it last week at Dallas Cowboys headquarters? And yeah, a lot of information came out of that one.
Yeah, a ton of information. More than 200 directors of football operations and assistant DFOs from throughout college football, close to 100 from the FBS division. Every conference was represented by multiple DFOs. It was a hugely informative event. It's the fourth or fifth year in a row that I've attended the national DFO conference, but I just got through telling Scott at Football Scoop that this was hands down the most beneficial, the most informative. We'll dive into that today, T.O., but everything is changing. It's continuing to change with transfer portal and NIL, and that's where we're at, and hopefully we'll be able to share some good information over the course of this show.
Yeah, and with NIL, I think Notre Dame fans, obviously, they did a great job in the December, the first period. It was extremely quiet here in the second period. The word need is overstating it, but desires exist. And I still maintain that another starting unicorn, a starting tackle that wants to join Notre Dame as a graduate student or a person that can come in and start right away in the portal, doesn't look like it'll work out. That's one of the few positions where it's hard to bring in a viable reserve that you need that can help you, unlike defensive line, where we always bring up the Chris Smith example. It's so easy to get one of those. I feel like you can get that possibly in the secondary because of the loss of Micah Bell and Clarence Lewis. Not sure that's a need until there's an injury, but it is a need if there is an injury. So I think that's about where you're looking to wrap it up for Notre Dame, but that's not even our topic for today. It's how everything is, so much has changed, and everyone listening to the show knows that, but is worse the word? It's going to get worse?
Yeah, it for now, and then this is the perfect timing for this because it ties directly into last week. And I think maybe the most transparent statement was during one of the presentations, again, from a Power 5 DFO. And he said, look, it's better players by far in the portal in December and January. It's bigger money right now in the portal in May. Because I talked about this with people at Notre Dame since returning from Texas. I talked about this with an NCAA head coach yesterday, and coaches are coming out of spring camp and they're like, God, we really suck at this position, or we really need help at this position. And there's a little bit of panic purchase right now going on in the college football marketplace. And the DFO from a Power 5 institution who discussed it last week on stage in Texas point blank said, we got a guy that's not going to start for us, that's going into the portal, that's been offered twice the money he was offered to go into the portal in December and January when he elected to stay with us. Now he sees he's not going to play. He's going back into the portal and he's going to get twice as much money, and he still wasn't going to start for us. And I ran that scenario by some assistant coaches around the sport, like I said, some other people, and they're like, yeah, it's exactly that. People are panicking. People are saying this May is when we know exactly or feel exactly what we need. And those positions are becoming premium positions. And you'll see offensive linemen, you'll see running backs, you'll see people at other key positions way overpaid that are coming into the portal or in the portal right now trying to make a decision.
Then it's very good news for Notre Dame fans that this was not well publicized for the roster, because there's a quarterback on the team, no matter who it might have been, that would have garnered a lot of interest and a lot more money than he was probably offered in December. That's one of the points, like a tangential point you're making. If this will be common knowledge, probably when they see the contracts, when the players know what people are being offered in the spring, maybe wait in December. The need becomes greater. Supply and demand becomes, if all of a sudden it becomes a market for the person in demand.
Yeah. And in December, unless you're maybe a transitionary program, or you've had a losing season, and in December you still got your head coach and everyone in the organization. Either if you're Notre Dame, you would be expecting to get ready for the playoffs this December, or other programs you're going to be expecting to get ready for the playoffs or bowl games. And so, yeah, there are December or whatever. And so the timing is different. Again, the timing in December, January for a lot of coaches is still on that year's team, whereas coming out of coming out of spring camp. Everybody's spring camps are essentially over with at this point. They know or feel they know exactly where those roster holes are, and those are becoming premium positions, even though it was universal. You know, one person on that stage gave a concrete example of what was happening in his program. It was a panel of five, and all five agreed with exactly that, those sentiments, that if you need to shop in the portal, you'll get better players in December or January than what you're going to get now, but you'll spend a hell of a lot more money right now.
So what you're saying is the off-reference Nick McLeod of 2020 would have been a little bit tougher for Notre Dame to bring in and become an all-ACC second-teamer nowadays.
Yeah, and it would have been extremely more expensive. And I'll give another example. I was visiting with some people from the SEC, and one of their programs was scheduled to host somebody from a G5 school last weekend, and these individuals were having to coordinate logistics. And my understanding was the guy was saying, I'm ready to come visit this weekend, and I'm ready to commit. You know, I need about $175,000. And this person, again, was coming from a G5 program, and they said, we appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and cancel your visit. And they brought somebody else in. That might have been a defensive player. They were going to bring an offensive player in, and the head coach was like, if this guy shakes me down, we'll cancel his visit too. But that's the reality of it. There's another defensive lineman in the portal right now who is coming from a Power 5 program that I've had enough people tell me over the last week and a half, went into the portal asking for $250,000 to $300,000. Right now he thinks he can get $500,000. And we'll see if somebody's willing to pay that. Obviously they have not yet, or he would have publicly committed and prepared to take his career elsewhere. But that's where the marketplace is right now. He went in thinking he could get $250,000 or $300,000 a few months ago, and now he's up to thinking he should get $500,000.
I'm glad you brought up the coach deciding to cancel the visit and someone being offended by, you know, being shaken down for money, because that's how all of us would feel in that situation. And it's a great time to bring up the fact that that may be out of the coach's hands coming up in the next few years. I made a comment a while ago, maybe over a year ago, a general manager is necessary in college football. Everybody has one now, but he really is. In case of Notre Dame, Chad Bowden's an instrumental part of the recruiting at Notre Dame, recruiting players in the transfer portal, of course, recruiting high school players. But it's almost to the point, we're getting to the point, where that is going to be another position where the general manager is making your financial decisions like the NFL has.
Yeah, that's the model. That was the prevailing sentiment, again, last week at those DFO meetings. I've got some notes here that I'll share in just a moment, but you're exactly right. It's going to be more and more the NFL model. The coach is going to have some input on the roster, but it's going to be more like, again, the NFL, where the coach will have say, and he'll battle for, if it's the head coach, he'll battle for all of the position coaches, will battle for the guys they like the most. But ultimately, it's going to be the personnel department and the GM who is kind of responsible on that side of things. And then within that, you're going to have, how do you distribute your money? How are you going to allocate your funds? Exactly how will that be played out? The terms they use, I'm going to look at my notes here. The terms they use last week were, get ready, because college football programs are either going to have a chief business officer or a chief financial officer. It's going to happen, quote, it's going to proliferate major college athletics and specifically college football. And that's going to be how your rosters are constructed moving forward as a collective force between the football coaches and that staff. And it's going to be within the dynamics. And look, love him or hate him, Brian Kelly had some very candid comments on it this week when he talked about exactly how he has to be mindful if somebody's, again, asking a defensive lineman, asking for $500,000 in the transfer portal right now. Brian Kelly said, I got offensive linemen that are my bell cows that played for me and had to play for me as true freshmen and sophomores the previous 2 years. Now I'm supposed to pay a bunch of money to bring a guy into the locker room. What does that do to the locker room dynamics? That's why Clemson coach Dabo Swinney for years has talked about wishing his players would pool their money for NIL and that everyone would get equal distribution. That's why I think you're seeing some programs try more and more to have a tiered system where you come in as a freshman. Once you arrive, you get some money. If you become a freshman starter, your salary maybe goes up to $150,000, $175,000. If you become a freshman All-American, or in some cases freshman All-Conference, your salary goes up from that, and you're tiered throughout the course of your time. That's going to be more and more common throughout college football. Whether or not it's publicly discussed, those tiers already exist right now. They're very prevalent, and they're very much going to be part of things moving forward, T.O.
I'm glad you brought that up because I had 2 points on Brian Kelly. At one point, Tim Priester mentioned what the dynamic is going to be of bringing in people, not the guys that everybody on the team thinks you need to bring in, like a starting quarterback that gets $1 million or gets anything like that. But like Brian Kelly mentioned, how are we bringing in a guy that's not as good as my offensive lineman because we need a defensive tackle that's dwarfing the money they're making? That is not going to go away anytime soon, but that is what the general manager has to step in and say. You need this guy. It's more important. Sorry, it's a buyer's market for defensive tackle. You have good offensive linemen. I mean, let's put it this way. It's kind of like if you're a subscriber to a website, you don't get the deals.
Yeah.
The new people get the deals. It's just the way life goes, but it's tough when there's $500,000 instead of $999 a month.
Yeah, you're the worst place to be in right now in society is to already have a cell phone contract because you don't get any of the deals. You want to be somebody's new customer. And that's an applicable theory for the transfer portal as well. You want to be somebody's new customer. You want to be somebody's shiny new toy on that defensive line or at tackle or at the quarterback position. It was fascinating to hear that. We had one director of ops from a Power 5 program say, "We don't ever mention retention in our program because we're constantly recruiting." And there was some great insight, a couple of things that I really want to dive in and share here because it's all interrelated. There was somebody, a DFO from a program last week, who discussed the fact that they're now having to assign people to the post-game handshake line because as they played some conference, then conference opponents last year, some people who will not be conference opponents this year, they were going through the line saying, "We could use you on our team. You should come talk to us. Come play with us." They said they literally witnessed and went back on their game tape and saw tampering on the field after the game. I do think it's important to note there were some NCAA representatives there last week as well. It's all going to depend on how the court cases come down, and I don't think anyone believes it looks favorable for the NCAA. But the NCAA did indicate we are still accepting information. There are still people turning in other programs for tampering. If the courts happen to rule in our favor, we will be seeking justice for those programs who are out there tampering right now. So I thought that's worth noting. I think that's important information. They're not completely giving up on it. They're not completely giving up on trying to have some regulation and trying to have some gentlemen's agreements out there, so to speak. There was another director of football ops from a G5 program, but a very, very successful G5 program, who said, "We haven't yet seen it in our football program, but our basketball coach is discussing eliminating the post-game handshake because he witnessed tampering this past season on his basketball team."
I mean, it's so hard to prove, because if it's not a coach, and if it's who's graduated from Notre Dame, we can get out of it. Let's say Jaren Grant in 2014 goes to a handshake line with somebody at Duke or Ohio State and says, "Man, I sure would love to have you play with us next year."
Yeah.
"That's an awfully deep bench you have at Duke, but you'd start here right away."
Yeah.
That's not tampering when Jaren Grant says something like that, but it sure would be if it was Mike Bray.
Yeah, exactly. And you're exactly that. That's tampering. That's honestly somewhat smart utilization of your resources, especially if you've got a bunch of players in the NFL and maybe they met a kid at a camp or they're from the same geographical area, but they're one that has attended a different school and used it as a path to the NFL, and the younger kid is at a different school altogether, but that they may have a pre-existing relationship. Maybe they went to the same high school. That's not tampering, but these officials, these school staff members said that they witnessed it on the football field, specifically in two post-game handshake lines last year. And then also this G5 individual said his head basketball coach witnessed it and was so frustrated, again, to the point he's discussing eliminating the post-game handshake. I think that's fascinating. Here's one other thing that I want to share kind of along that similar topic, and I literally spoke with an NCAA head coach about it yesterday. There was very much discussion in that room last week, T.O., of these new NIL deals, not only being more official and formalized in the form of being on paper, but actual contracts are talking about being in place. And there were a couple of programs last week who indicated their NIL contracts have buyout clauses. If you take your NIL money from that school and you decide to leave, you owe a buyout penalty, just like a coach if he leaves for a different opportunity and it's not an advancement. And then obviously, if you're leaving as a running back at one school to go be a running back at another school, that's not going to change. You're not elevating your career, right, so to speak. Even if you're going from G5 to Power 5, the contracts don't seem like they will be constructed that way. And when I talked to that NCAA head coach yesterday and asked him about it, I said, have you heard anything about this? And he said, bro, we'd be fools not to do that. You have to have some protection. I think it's probably more prominent in the minds of everyone right now because of a guy like Caden Proctor, who was at Alabama, freshman All-American, spent the spring semester at Iowa, got NIL money that Iowa has confirmed he received. And now it's expected that Proctor will again be a starting offensive lineman in the fall for Alabama. So those are some of the more nuanced things that are popping up. And it's a very fluid situation. All these things, though, are reasons why, as we opened this show, you need a GM. You need that structure in place, and you need to have people that will look at business decisions and not look at human decisions.
And basketball is interesting because it can be crippling if someone gets one or two players out of your handshake line and they're gone. Football, you have an 85-man team. You should be able to withstand it. I had a radio host call me, I think it was back in January, and asking if I knew if Notre Dame had made good on all of their NIL payments, or were there any complaints about Notre Dame's NIL payments. And I have not heard a complaint in that regard. I'm sure something has gone wrong somewhere along the way, but I've never heard a complaint for Notre Dame in that regard, because they were getting rampant complaints, basketball, not football. And he told me the money that this program was shelling out to basketball. It's not Kentucky, okay? $800,000 to basketball starters.
Yeah.
And I fell over thinking of that, because I don't know what Joe Alt and Benjamin Morrison got. And those guys would get more if they were, they would get more if they came along starting now, as opposed to a couple years ago. Everybody missed out that came to college in 2020 and 2021 because it has gone crazy since. But I don't think those guys got $800,000 from Notre Dame. And you think of how much better they probably are at their sport than the players on this basketball team.
Yeah. Now you wonder, Notre Dame has done a good job of getting meaningful, true NIL opportunities, right, for its student athletes, going all the way back to Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton had some national deals.
He is number one. He worked. I'm not saying going and doing charity is not working. Of course it is. Yeah. It's great. But Kyle Hamilton had a job for his NIL. That was legitimately a job.
Yeah. No, he did. Along those lines, you're exactly right. Now, I think Joe Alt had some very good offers and was a six-figure earner for sure the last couple of years Notre Dame.
Mid six figures, but I still think it was maybe less. Or let's say he made exactly the same amount as these starters, five starters on an SEC basketball team. That's nuts to me. And they were being defaulted on, by the way. That was the point.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, and that's a pressing concern. And now I've got those notes handy once again. I'm just going to read it directly, what was said in this meeting about NIL and about the fact that contracts are coming for players. And it said there will be buyout money going into NIL contracts. It's got to be done because it's an effort of keeping NIL programs afloat, which is what we talked about before, T.O. It's about that ROI. And if you're pouring into this and kids are still leaving and transferring to a different program, there is no ROI. So if there's buyouts included in those contracts, you feel like, okay, you're getting some money back. You go spend it on another player and keep it afloat. It just said, this is where it's headed. You're going to be under contract. It's a matter of when, not if, and it will actually protect both parties. So that's the theme coming from the room. And as we discuss the money and you talk about how crazy it is, I talked with multiple people last week who told me that their respective programs, their respective schools have NIL salaries just for football, that their salary would be about $1 million a month for their football team. And that very much jives with another SEC program that I referenced in the fall that was spent two actually in the fall that were spending between 10 and 12 million. I talked with someone else from a Power 4 conference, I guess you would say now, who indicated to me that even within their own league, where I referenced other schools that were spending about 12 million, they were like, well, we're at 7 to 8 million. And I had a DFO tell me point blank last week that every single person on their roster, even on their football roster, even some of the walk-ons, if they were like a starting walk-on kicker, That starting walk-on kicker was making more in NIL money than this DFO was making in salary, guaranteed as a full-time employee of the institution.
Other changes, and this was heavily discussed last week at the conference, I'm sure, is the early signing day change from December. It has to change out of December because the football calendar has changed. December 20th used to be a nice little break for everybody. December 20th is not a break for anybody anymore unless you are – and you're, it's not even a break if you don't make a bowl game because you then have a roster and coaching staff in upheaval. So December 20th has to be out for early signing day. But a June early signing day, as you mentioned on our Irish Illustrated Insider podcast, will be problematic for coaches.
Yeah, and again, I spoke with Notre Dame officials this week after I returned. I spoke with other people around the sport. That June signing period is expected to pass later this month. As we've discussed as a staff at Irish Illustrated, we're going to continue to monitor that. Once the vote takes place, we'll have coverage on Irish Illustrated as well as Football Scoop. But I don't have anyone telling me right now that it's not expected to pass. And the direct words last week were the June signing period is likely coming. Get ready. Also, there's a vote later this month as well to make July, the entirety of July, a complete dead period. Again, both of those are expected to pass. If the July dead period is voted on and passed later this month, it goes into effect immediately this year. The June signing period would take place for the 26th class and would be June of 2025.
So that could affect one of Notre Dame's camps. And Notre Dame has a two-part camp. One is June 12th, I believe, is the other July 17th. And that would affect Notre Dame's two-part camp. But they don't even know if that's going to happen until May 20th. It's hard to, as I said to you pre-show, do you want to get as many as those July 17 junior day kids as you can into a June camp? But I'm sure it's in two parts because of the largesse of the two of them. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, as it pertains to that June signing period, you've got state high school coalitions in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, maybe Mississippi, maybe Kentucky. Not sure if Tennessee has adopted anything publicly. I know at least one of the Carolinas had, maybe both Carolina Coaching Association. At the high school level, and TP referenced it the other day, the fear with the June signing period is how many high school seniors will start sitting out their final season, especially if they are on track to be mid-year enrollees. So this is going to have a dramatic trickle-down effect that high school coaches, by and large, are universally against. But again, yeah. It, people at the NCAA level fully expect it to pass. I don't think I spoke with people. The SEC does not have a coach in favor of a June signing period. I'm not exactly sure how this is happening. One of the things is what you just talked about is that you can't have, like, this December, the signing period is scheduled. The early signing period is scheduled for Wednesday, December 18th. Presumably, 2 days later, Notre Dame should be getting ready to play in the playoffs and quite possibly getting ready to host a playoff game.
On my birthday, John. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, potentially, as we noted also Monday, those playoff games this fall, one will be on Friday, three will be on Saturday. So you could conceivably be trying to have a signing day and secure your roster for the future on that Wednesday while also preparing for a playoff opponent to host a game 48 hours later. It's a convoluted mess with the calendar. It's never quite perfect on the NCAA calendar, but this is steering towards what's going to be a real disaster.
I want to bring this up because, as you and Priester pointed out, that is an enticement, the June signing period, for top-tier players to skip their high school senior years. Imagine someone, I don't think he would have done it, but imagine someone like CJ Carr, who is long committed to Notre Dame, clearly would have been a candidate for that, except, of course, he wanted to try to lead his team to a state title. I always admired Phil Dracovic for what became a bad career decision when he did not enroll early at Notre Dame because he wanted to help his high school win a state basketball title. Like, that is the competitor in all of us should like that from Phil Dracovic.
Yeah.
No, he definitely needed to be on campus for Notre Dame football, though, for his career. I think it hurt. Now, I don't know. He probably has no regrets, but I'm saying this is going to change in many ways, a June signing period. But when do you put the sign? When is the signing period? When should it be?
Yeah.
Is there a mid-October signing period? It's right in the middle of football season.
But yeah, still, I was going to say, could you have a end of September or end of October signing period? Pardon me, so that you know, I'm not sure there's a great answer to that, but It's pretty easy to see from the way that college players have started skipping bowl games or non-playoff contests in order to get ready for their professional opportunities. It will trickle down, and it will be the same, particularly I would think at the running back position. If you're the if you're a five-star running back and you're signing with Notre Dame or Alabama or Georgia or whomever next June, that's a position that's considered not to have a lot of career longevity anyway. Are you going to risk it on your final high school year if you've already secured that opportunity, especially if you're getting significant NIL money and believe you're going into a situation at the collegiate level where you're going to get big NIL money and also have a chance to be an impact player right away as a freshman? I know that's what high school coaches are concerned about, that it's really going to wreak havoc on the prep game.
Johnny, kind of want to wrap up this edition of Overtime with any tidbits you have left over from the conference that I think are interesting for our readers or our listeners, excuse me. But it's that was another thought I had, was the paying of high school juniors NIL money would be the next step, because you have to entice the high school junior, not just the high school senior.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because it is worth noting. And one of the people on stage last week said it point blank. He said, look, I operate in California, and this was a third party person who was at the event, who was at the DFO conference. And he said, I operate in California. I can NIL any California kids that I want to. And I thought, we turn everything into a verb, but now that NIL is being made a verb, that's just wild to me. But anyway, he said, I can NIL any player and any high school player in California that I want to. And it was very interesting to hear them say, look, these kids, it's becoming a chase, and it's becoming, in a lot of cases, led by the parents. And the direct quote was, heartbreakingly, it's less the saying about, hey, I want to go to this institution, Notre Dame, Stanford, whatever, and get this great education. And it's more, hey, this school is going to give me $75,000 more than you for NIL. And they point blank recounted instances where parents are on those trips and the kids are off being kids, and they're bonding with their potential future teammates. And they're like, okay, let's go see the School of Business. Then we've got a lunch set up. And multiple DFOs last week said parents cut us off and say, we don't want to see all that. When do we talk money? And it's becoming more and more. They're arriving on these weekend visits, these official visits, wanting to know, when are they going to talk money? It was interesting. They said only about 20 programs last year at the highest levels fully turned a profit as athletics departments. And one other thing from a G5 program who spoke last week, and this ties into one of the anecdotes I already shared, is that this individual said, retention is really, really hard for us. We've had 20 guys leave our program since the onset of the transfer portal era to go transfer to a Power 5 school, and not a single one of those 20 guys, according to this individual, has been drafted after leaving their original program. They said they were able to retain three players who initially went into the portal. They convinced them to stay, and they said all three of those players were drafted, including one who was just drafted last month in Detroit in this year's NFL draft. So, very, very interesting when you see those numbers kind of bear out like that. And again, one of the guys point blank said, we got a guy who just left us. He got $250,000. He still was not going to start for us this year. He's going to a Power 5 program, a lineman, and getting $250,000. And he wasn't going to start for his G5 program.
I was remiss in my duties looking at the comments. That's why we're a live show, John Bryce. So I'm going to go over to the comments to wrap this up this time. Actually, Chris from ND4L Fortson, in the future to 3 to 5 years, do you think scholarships will go away and now be included in the NIL packages, especially if they make student athletes employees?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the great questions that's being debated right now. The employee thing is really difficult. The employee thing probably helps the business model that we've discussed, makes that more applicable and actionable. But now there's been movement this week from the College Athletes Association, I forget the formal name of it, to say, well, we want a revenue share, but we don't want to be employees. And there's a reason for that. And I didn't know this until somebody told me last week. If you sign a person out of the portal, the way it's structured right now, and it's a multi-year person, you're obligated to that person for the remainder of his career, even if he comes to you and says, I'm done playing football. You don't have to count him at that point in time against your scholarship, but you are still obligated to pay for his school for the remainder of his education. So if you sign a person who's coming out of the portal as a redshirt freshman and has 4 years of eligibility, and after a year he says, I'm not playing anymore, you're still on the hook for three more years or two more years, whatever it takes for that person to graduate.
The interesting thing about the employee thing, and I brought this up 3 or 4 years ago because I got a little mad at the situation back then, three of being an employee of college football instead of the scholarship. But, and I mean, I believe in true NIL. I absolutely believe that O'Bannon should have been paid and Kyle Hamilton and everything. But you need to go to the structure of employees. I know Notre Dame doesn't want to do this, but you have to be able to cut bad employees. You have to be able to release them. And I never got to ask Jack Swarbrick this question, so I will ask Pete Bevacqua. Is there a day where a student athlete can sign a four-year scholarship like Notre Dame does? They will keep you for 4 years if you turn down NIL money. In other words, I am guaranteed to graduate from the University of Notre Dame if I work hard enough, but I won't take the NIL money because maybe he's not good enough to deserve that NIL money. Do you ever see I would love to hear an athletic director or coach wonder if a student would ever, student athlete would ever say, don't pay me, but I don't ever want to have to leave the program.
Well, and again, to that, a really great question from our viewer there about it. I don't know that it has an answer. I can tell you that I felt this way. I talked to an AD of a Group of Five program last week in advance of the meetings as I was doing some work on that Group of Five playoff proposal, as well as the potential for the Group of Five conferences, which are now 64 teams, to have their own top 25 poll this year, which they're trying to have launch August 1. But it becomes a Title IX issue if you start doing revenue sharing and then also are bringing that in-house. That's two other things. A lot of schools believe it's moving toward NIL collectives being able to be folded in to the athletics program, to be part of the athletics program. There's a lot of people who want that, who believe we can ask donors, hey, give to us, and then we'll disperse out of it NIL. And so that's one other thing that is worth monitoring that is very much a topic of discussion right now out there on the table. And then that, along with what I said about NIL going to the contract model and having buyout penalties if you leave schools, I think those are both very pertinent issues to continue to monitor.
There's only one way to end this show, John, and I think it's from Blyberg. Where's your accent from?
East Tennessee. East Tennessee. So there you go. I suppose it's deep south. Some days it's worse than others. Today is a bad day because I'm really tired.
So. I actually asked that question because I knew where your accent was from, of course. But I want to ask you this. How much would Dale Carter or Eric Berry make in NIL these days if they wanted to leave and go from Tennessee to Alabama?
Yeah. Especially
some of the talents of the past. Can you imagine what they are thinking now?
Yes. Or how about a Bo Jackson or somebody along the way? Or Darren McFadden, when he was so good, one of the best collegiate players I ever saw in person at the running back position. He was so good. Or Felix Jones, who was always the backup to Darren McFadden or the lightning to his thunder. So yeah, it would those guys would make an absolute mint.
DeYoung could have played for Florida State, Miami, and Florida in that time and made money, I bet. He'd have been all over the place in that situation.
Probably would have, and probably would have told all three about it, too.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this edition, the inaugural edition off-season of Irish Illustrated Overtime. We'll be back with this. I think it's going to increase in frequency as the summer goes on. I know we'll be back with at least one next week, and I believe John Bryce might be guest.
Yeah, I think so. I think we got some more good stuff about changing rules and changing dynamics on the actual playing field of college football that we can discuss next week.
For John Bryce of FootballScoop.com and Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for listening.